Just as the canoe pushed out into midstream, on the landward side of the stockade came a distant murmuring. As it grew nearer, you could hear that it was a great shuffling and moaning, with the occasional shout and crack of a whip, and a dull chanting in cadence behind it.
"It's the slave train!"
bawled Spring. And sure enough, out of the jungle came the head of a long line of niggers, yoked two by two with long poles, shuffling along between their guards. They were a startling sight, but there were hundreds of them, all naked, their black bodies gleaming in the sunshine and their legs covered with splashes of mud up to the thigh. They moaned and chanted as they walked, big, stalwart bucks with woolly heads. The sound they made was like a huge swarm of bees, except when one of the guards, big niggers in kilts and blouses carrying muskets, brought his whip into play, and the crack would be followed by a yelp of pain.
"Easy, damn you!" yelled Spring. "That's money you're cutting at!"
Once round the first bend, we were in another world. The jungle penned us in like a huge green tent, muffling the shrieks of the beasts and birds beyond it. The heat was stifling, and the oily brown water itself was so still that the plash of the sweeps sounded unnaturally loud. It was a labour to breathe the heavy, damp air. It must have been 4 hours before Spring ordered a halt at a small clearing on the water's edge.
"We'll march from here, Mr. Kinney. No sense in risking our craft any nearer these gentlemen than we have to."
The huge canoe was manhandled in under the mangroves. When she was hidden to Spring's satisfaction, with a guard posted, he led the way along a track through jungle so thick you couldn't see a yard either side. The air was alive with mosquitoes, and we stumbled along, slapping and cursing. It was a poor trail, and when Spring asked me what I thought of it, I answered, "Hellish." He barked a laugh and says,
"Ha! Truer than you know, it's made of corpses. Some of the thousands that result from the Dahomeans' yearly festival of human sacrifice. They build up the path with them, bound together with vines and cemented with mud."
You may guess how this cheered up the journey, but there was worse ahead. We smelled apakoto long before we saw it, a rank wave of corruption that had us cursing and gagging. The town was bigger than I had imagined, a huge, stockaded place crammed with round grass lodges. All of it was filthy and ooze-ridden, except for the central square, which had been stamped flat and hard. The whole population, thousands of them, were gathered round it, stinking fit to knock you flat. The worst of the reek came from a great building like a cottage at the far side, which seemed to be built of shiny brown stones. Kirk put me wise.
"Skulls," says he.
And that is what they were. Thousands upon thousands of human skulls, cemented together to make the death house the ghastly place where the human sacrifices were herded before execution. The evil of the place hung over that great square like an invisible mist.
"I seen as many as 100 chopped up at one time before that death house," says Kirk. "Men, women and kids, all cut up together. It's like a May Day fair to these black heathen."
It was plain to see now why Spring had us heavily armed. I'd have been happier with a park of artillery as well.
"Aye, they're savage swine if you don't mind your eye," says Kirk,
rolling his quid.
"And Gizo's the most fearsome bastard of the lot. You never seen nothing like his bodyguard. Not nowheres. You just watch out for him. Best fighters in Africa, they reckon, and probably the only nigger troops anywhere that march in step, and they can move in dead silence, which most niggers can't. Oh, they're the beauties they are."